Blog Talk Radio.
Things are indeed rather superstitious for this present generation. Things are mysterious. Hence, tonight, this is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, coming to you live on air from blogtalkradio.com. Welcome back to the show tonight. You're in for an educational lecture tonight. And we want to invite you to call in to share with us. The number is 657-383-0944. Tonight I want to spend time explaining how this present generation, particularly of Afro-American males, are mystified, or the title of the show is The Generation of Mystification. We're going to give a historical background tonight, and we will have two live guests actually tomorrow dealing with addiction, how to overcome it. They're out of the St. Louis, Missouri area. You don't want to miss that. You certainly don't want to miss that. We normally have our shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But in order to cater to their needs, we're having this special show on tomorrow night, Wednesday, that we'll pick back up with our regular Thursday broadcast on this coming Thursday. Having said that, we want to focus tonight, though, on the generation of mystification. I hope at the end of this show, this broadcast, those who listen live and those who might listen later will gain a understanding, or at least consider a position as to why so many of our young men find themselves caught up. Had a great show last Thursday with Mr. Gerald Bloodsaw from the Chicago area. And we learned some very good things about how to properly raise African-American male to be successful. Reality is, this is Talk Straight. And the reality is, we got too many young brothers don't have the benefit of that knowledge. And the challenge for me, you, and everyone else is to bring it to them. My very good friend, I believe, is tuning in with us, Pastor Ricky Waller, who is a panelist on the show. And he's been with us, we thank God for him, as well as a supporter of our traveling lecture series. And we are sharing his powerful voice in print in his book, Still High. Pastor Waller, how you doing?
Pastor Waller?
Good. How you doing there, Pastor Dockery?
Great. Thank you for tuning in with us. I know you're doing as you normally do, laying back and following the show, but we have a slightly different format, very similar, but a slightly different format. We're inviting callers, if you're listening, to call us at 657-383-0944. But I do want to take time to give a historical background for where we are. So thank you for being with us, sir, and we appreciate our listening audience as well. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I said very well, so I appreciate and glad to be here, man.
All right. So let's get with it. Before I do so, let me explain. Tonight, you saw in the promo that I'm going to engage five rap artists. And I should make this disclaimer. Some of the language that you'll hear tonight may be somewhat strong for individuals' ears. I would encourage you, if you have a young person with you, to be prepared to explain to them or maybe close their ears. But given that this is Talk Straight, it's time out for us to pity Pat and play games, because we're losing too many to the grave. And I, for one, am sick and tired of seeing the devil get two for one. One is dead physically and the other die a social death because he's locked up somewhere or pulled away from society. So y'all bear with me. I realize that some of the language may be a little strong tonight, but we do that for emphasis because each of these are associated with a case study. And I'm going to be bringing you factual information. I want you to follow it. Please call me if you have a question or comment or even perhaps a challenge to the positions that we share. I want to engage you tonight. 657-383-0944. It was in order for me to make that disclaimer tonight. And so now that we have, let's get with it. This current generation, anyone born between 1985 to 2015 is a part of this generation that I'm describing. So if you were born in 2015, a year ago, basically you are part of this next 30 years that's coming, or you're at the end of this 30 years, I should say, of this generation. Sociologically, the term generation refers to a 30-year period or time span. So if you were born between 1985 and 2015, this is the generation that we're speaking of. I believe each generation has a responsibility to share the lessons they've learned and the positive examples that they have accomplished or have found with the generation following them. And this is why we place this focus. As you may know, we have a historical traveling lecture series, and we're looking at the last five generations since formally slavery was ended in America, 1865 to 2015 and beyond. Of course, we're about to hit 2017 now, and we still, in my humble opinion, have great work to do. Now, let me share with you a commentary on what I'm calling the era of African-American social mystification. Afro-male aggression exhibited throughout urban America today is a result of what I'm calling a violence continuum. The continuum is a process by which it starts from one level and it goes gradually to a higher level. It begins with ignorance. That's the first step. Ignorance about self. Frustration that stems from false assumptions about who hates you, who's coming after you, who's your enemy, what you got to deal with in order to get over on someone. This morphs or turns into fear. And this fear is driven by anger over the adversity that many face in society. Prolonged anger turns into anxiety. That's this eerie, ugly feeling that makes you nervous and really you can't be still and unhappy. Ultimately, unprocessed or dealt with anxiety turns itself into extreme and self-inflicting violence. The sad part about it is that the object or the thing we turn the violence on is Afro-American males like ourselves. We've heard the phrase, it takes a village. Well, what happens when the village turns on itself? Serious chaos. The African-American male subgroup has existed in America for now approximately 397 years. That is, of course, if we use Lerone Bennett's date, 1619, where he wrote a book entitled Before the Mayflower, and he described the presence of people of Afro descent in America before 1620, when the first slave ship came. All right? So at least 397 years or so. However, Afro males have been formally free as American citizens for now about 151 years. 1865, December 1865, was the date in which the 34 states ratified the 13th Amendment, therefore making slavery illegal all across the United States of America in its foreign jurisdictions. Here we are now, 151 years later, 150 years by 2015, 151 years by 2016, which is on its way out now. The problem is that the Afro-American male, his ethnic character has been shaped largely by political, economic, and social trends dating back from the time he was said to be free as an American citizen. Rather than operating solely from his own agenda, his free will, he's heavily dependent on the plans of others. Most tragically, important lessons learned by males of previous generations have been lost over time, leaving the present generation in serious doubt about their place in America as an Afro-male citizen. In 1712, a key method used to dominate the Afro-family unit was male dehumanization. This process came with both intended and unintended consequences. By December 18, 2015, as I made reference to early, 150 years passed, and now we're in 16, going into 17. Since government started the effort to empower so-called Negroes at one time, colored, black, Afro-American, and now we're commonly referred to and referred to ourselves as African-American, to assume their right to the privilege of American citizenship, of the Afro-male evolution in America, will reveal that an unintended consequence of self-alienation from the American dream has resulted, basically, for this population. And that is where many of them feel as though I have no place, therefore I must always be on guard. Hence the anxiety I made reference to, the fear, the assumption that somebody is after me. Lastly, if a character poll was taken of the typical Afro male today, the results would most likely indicate that they are mystified. When something is mysterious, it's unknown, it leaves questions, and it causes concern about what is not known. They're mystified when it comes to identifying their character as men. By and large, young Afro-American males today have lost respect and confidence in their elders as a result of the rise and fall of Afro-elected figures across America throughout our history. Strife and dissension among African or Negro, black, colored religious institutions and denominations, and general disparity socially in America. The triple threat to healthy Afro male discovery includes: one, a failure to educate male accomplishments and setbacks of their historic forerunners; two, the destruction of the Afro family unit. This destruction comes largely when male and females are in this rivalry or fight over who should run the family, who should be in charge. And lastly, harmfully misleading influences of pop culture. That's what we're going to look at tonight. We're going to see how music that shapes, drives, and motivates too many of our young people in their daily lives is destroying them. That's a concern to me. I don't know about anybody else, but it's certainly a concern to me. And so I have five case studies that we're going to look at tonight. And as we work ourselves through these, I want to invite you, if you're listening, call us. And if you listen to the show afterwards, go to my website, bfcinstitute.com, and there you'll find a number to call me or email me. Let's dialogue that way as well. But tonight you can call live 657-383-0944. Pastor Waller.
What do you say, Pastor Docker? Yes, sir.
Help me out, man. I need some help tonight.
Oh, man, you hold it, man.
I need some help, brother.
Yeah,
where
brother.
Is,
you
man? Said, talk to me now.
All you need is a reminder, I think, of all the things that you said, brother. I'm sitting back here listening, and as I tap into the information, I start to rejoice because you said something that was so valuable that I cannot speak on all of it with this amount of time that we have. And
okay,
that's how strong
okay.
So I will tap into just one of the most important things that you say that we as black men and women, what we were called, names that sound like nicknames to me. You know, it reminds me, they used to call me, my mother named me Ricky, but they called
me Fat
Ricky because I was fat.
Come on now.
They called me Trick Ricky because I can handle a basketball. And I'm just thinking about all those names, man, that they call us, color, black, Negro, you know, and all those names, man, but yet still the power of enslavement, to be enslaved. And when a person, as you was talking about slavery, and I thought about that, become the slave of whatever you obey. And since I obeyed a particular lifestyle, it just reminded me I was a slave. I came out of one form of a slave and became a form of a slave in another, and a time and a location, and all of a sudden, where was I a slave at? In my own mind. That right there, you know, my mind was blind. And so you said so much, man, in just the introduction. So I want to thank you for that you said, and I trust that so many people that's tuned in would have an opportunity, man, to open up, call in, you know, because it's worth knowing about, you know, what is it that's causing us to be enslaved. We are even so enslaved amongst one another in our own community, so we don't get a chance to look back and appreciate at this point of where we've come from. And
that is exactly.
It's pretty tough, man. It's pretty tough.
Yeah, that
and
you're spot on. You're spot on.
Yes, and it's not no fault of one's own. It's just that the lack of information, you know, how valuable to the young people, to the generation after generation, and you was talking about each generation, and I was thinking about how can we become more effective at realizing that our generation should be able to have something to offer to the generation to come.
Amen. Amen. And if I might right here, as a pastor, you a pastor, and I've talked with many other pastors, sometimes I think where we get lost in the thick of things is what we're talking about right now, you don't find written in the Holy Bible in these words like this. Okay? But this is what our young people need to know about their history and their past in order to appreciate where they are today.
You made reference to
the different classifications or nomenclature. Negro, you know, when they subjected human beings to forced servitude from Africa, 1500, they decided, the Europeans, the Spanish and the Portugal, decide to name them Negro to identify those who they had subjugated. later on, as they continued to enslave people from the continent we called Africa, they referred to them as colored because some of them had been, some of the women had been raped and children were brought into the world that had mixed hue. So they wanted to distinguish those. They were still slaves.
Okay.
Right? And it, as time progressed in America, after slavery was over, there were individuals who said, we no longer want to be subjected to what you call us, Negro and colored. We're going to self-identify as black people. And this is during the Harlem Renaissance era with Claude McKay and Jean Tooman, Honor Bontemps, and Langston Hughes, people like this said, we want to identify ourselves, Marcus Garvey. That's where the concept of blackness came in, right? But as time progressed, we got Afro-American because we learned more. And then in 1985, Jesse Jackson introduced the concept of African-American. All of them had different reasons, different effects, but as you pointed out, it sounded like somebody nicknamed it. But who are we, and how do we identify ourselves?
Correct. Man, very good. My goodness. Great information, man. I tell you, brother, that's great information. And I think it's much needed because the power is within what you serve. And
that's right.
But to think about, I didn't even know who I was for 20 plus life. I didn't even know who I was, even with my name being what my mother named me.
Lord have
mercy. Man. And that's as a result of being captured. I wasn't behind prison walls, behind the bar, but I was in prison in my own community, man.
Wow.
And it's still today to know that. If you're talking about the land of the free. I mean, it was just kind of tough when I heard you, when you started off with this segment.
Mm-hmm.
It gave me a of gratitude, you know, to know that there's a lot of hurting people right now that, like myself, once upon a time, didn't know who I was. They don't know who they are right now. And
right.
So we self-destruct, Pastor, because the word, yes, it does say, you know, my people perish for the lack of knowledge. Yeah, it is that. And a lot of us don't know about Bible. I never knew about the Bible. I didn't have no concern about a Bible. And that's understandable.
Right.
I was ignorant concerning that.
I'm just learning about
you see,
and
so
that's
so
where a lot of these young brothers are today.
That's where they are, man.
I'm sorry.
And I
cut you off.
Yeah, you right. Go ahead. No, go ahead. That's right, though. That's exactly right. And
no,
the
I
compassion.
Was just agreeing with you. Absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The compassion, Pastor, is something that I really, really, really have because I understand. Now, had I not understood, I wouldn't be able to say I understand. But I do.
Right.
And I was just glad someone had compassion for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the compassion that one had on me, it's only fair. And I appreciate what you're doing. You're coming out with compassion upon the people, and you're sharing some much-needed information that if they open up to it, they can go share it with others, man. And suddenly
Absolutely.
We become of who we really are. You know, we're somebody. We wake up, or at least I would wake up, and for all those years, I was numb. I was asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I was afflicted with a chemical that enslaved me, man. And so that's what fasting comes from with me. And I heard you talk about church. And the church, I believe, had a position. And it's only because I went into the church and I saw them with a Bible. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know what was inside of it. But I heard people talk the love of God just so much. I often wondered, what was the concern about hurting people outside of the church that don't know anything about the Bible? And I thought about myself. Go ahead.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a point that I want to emphasize tonight. The people who don't know much, who don't go to church, okay? Their parents didn't take them, and they're not going, and they're not interested, basically, all right? But they their lives are in shambles. And it before you go out and start talking about the powerful word of God, as powerful as it is important to reach people on their level of understanding. Now, when you talk to a young brother or sister about the fear that they have every day they get up and go outside their house, go to school or whatever they do, even if they're sitting in a four-cornered room out of fear, when you talk about how that fear comes about and, more importantly, how they can resolve that fear and they get to understand that sometimes, oftentimes, it's false assumptions that drive the fear out of ignorance. But when a man don't know, the thing that human beings tend to fear the most are those are the things that they don't understand or they don't know. An animal,
that's right.
a wild animal will strike out at you out of fear that you may kill it. But
that's
God
right.
has given us the wisdom, the knowledge, and his likeness enough such that we don't have to act like wild animals as we go through life. That's the message.
That's right.
That's the message. Now let me just go ahead and introduce this first brother here. Clifford Joseph Harris Jr. Born September 25th, 1980, in Atlanta, Georgia, from the Bankhead
right.
community. They also call him, he's also known as T.I. Well, one of his most popular songs among young people, just take a few minutes to listen to this, and then we'll come back and talk about it on the other side. January 30th, 1997, the Washington Post, published by Mr. Thomas P. In that study, he pointed out that 1.46 million African-American men out of a total voting population of 10.4 million had lost their right to vote due to felony convictions, going to jail for stuff like this brother talking about in his song. That statistic explains why it is that so many young brothers don't participate in society politically and socially and economically. If you listen, Pastor, to the conversation from this young brother, and this is a very popular song, might I add, one of many. We're going to hear some more tonight. And you take the soundtrack away, you take the music away, and you had a conversation with this young cat on the street, what you realize is he's speaking from what he saw from Bankhead and what his core experience was. Money, cars, and hoes. That's how all he and his role. How helpful
exactly.
is that?
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up. Because the God that I've learned to serve, he had to meet me right where I was.
I see.
There's no pretending in when you know that this is what you're doing and who you are, and you're not pretending to be something that you're not. The reason why, because a person who pretends to be something when he's nothing, he deceived himself.
That's right.
So God to reach a person and give him some greater information to turn him in another direction. So the reason why the guys were speaking that way for those who are not perpetrating is because they're living and have lived that lifestyle. Because it is a lifestyle. Darkness is a lifestyle.
Sure it is.
And the light also style. It's all about which would you choose. And so most of the brothers have chosen darkness, however, to not bring harm or to mean harm, but darkness bring harm whether you mean it for the good or bad. It's just the lifestyle.
Right.
So I can relate to because of the way that I once upon a time lived. So I can understand how say, okay, brother, I know a God that can turn you in another direction. Now, the key to it is that are you willing to take a chance? And it's all about taking a chance. And,
right.
You know, Jay said years ago, for the love of money is the root of all kind of evil. Okay.
That's it.
That's also in the Bible. Yeah, amen. It's also in the Bible. I didn't know it was in the Bible because I didn't do Bible then. So what I'm saying is a lot of hurting out there that's actually looking for some information. And if someone could say, brother, I understand. I know exactly where you are. They're open. They're open.
Sure they
don't try to belittle them because that's a danger. You see, that's not the rule of God.
Let me shoot this in there. When you come with the Bible, quoting Bible scriptures, it's like speaking a foreign language to them. If you consider, I hear people say all the time, they know better, they know right from wrong. Well, if you listen to this conversation, you'll learn what they consider to be right. See, how he and his homies roll is by rolling around with their Cadillac, with their cars, their hoes. That's what's
right
to them.
That's right.
That's their core reality.
And believe me,
now,
that's
fair. Is that healthy? Absolutely not. But if you and I or anyone else is going to help them and bring them to a healthy level, that's where we got to meet them right there.
It's better that way.
Yes, sir.
They can identify once they change, they'll be able to say, I remember.
Absolutely.
Someone came out here talking about me, you know. And it would be so valuable, man. Pastor, I'm talking about experiencing that man coming out of a church
mm-hmm.
to do actually in the Bible. It mm-hmm. says, go to the world and preach the gospel to every creature.
That's
so
it.
I wonder sometimes. I said, I knew nothing about the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to church. A lot of people have been going to church for a long time.
I wonder why the
people wasn't doing that. I said, now, from what I heard in church and from the way that I saw them and looked upon the way they felt about God is that they love God.
Right.
But was afraid to go out into the world like the word said, and I didn't understand that. You know,
yeah.
that part really didn't understand, so I kept seeking knowledge and understanding. I said, maybe it's me. And I said,
no, the word
said that. It wasn't me. The word said, go out into the world and preach the gospel
right.
to every creature. And I couldn't help but
right.
to believe that he was talking about those people out there that are in those, quote, what they call gangs and
sure.
whatever else they're
sure.
that doing. I thought they included.
That's,
they were included. And if they
exactly
wasn't included,
right.
then you. Amen. I don't know a lot.
You're right on point. Now,
yeah,
you're right on point. The reality is this. Here's the reality. You, when you were in street life, and everyone else who was, I was a victim of street life at one time, right? Grappling in darkness, trying to find a way. The reality is that if your perception of what is real is based on what you see, you do every day, that's what motivates you. And I think that is the point that I want to emphasize here. Now, again, I'll say again that the best way to engage or approach a young person with this mentality is to get them to understand that there was a time where there were no cars, and there was a time when you respected females not as whole, but as the mothers, the vessel of civilization of life.
Well,
you see it different from that, right? So the catch is that you got a young person who's operating out of ignorance, and their ignorance drives their fear. The fear is, if I don't protect what I have and what I'm accustomed to, I might die, I might become extinct. Having said that, let me introduce this next brother here.
All right.
Now as I was doing my research, I came upon some information that suggested he was killed in prison recently. They found him unresponsive in his jail cell down in Louisiana. I don't know how true that is, so I don't want to quote that as fact. But this brother's name is Corey Miller. He is the cousin of another famous rapper named Master P. He sings in the hip-hop genre, basically, and he was born in 1975 in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thread here. From the South, from the East, from the West, there's a consistent mentality. Now, we hadn't looked at any artists from out West, from California. We hadn't looked at any from up North just yet. But what we're looking at is a mentality that has a influence all across urban America. Okay? Corey Miller is known by his rap name C Murder, and he was responsible. He's one of the lead singers in a song called "Down for My Niggas." And again, this may not sound as easy on some folks yet, but this is an academic exercise. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Call me 657-383-0944 if you want to join in. We got with us tonight our panelist, Pastor Ricky Waller. We're going to listen to C Murder and come back on the other side of C Murder, see what he's talking about. Now, I want you to listen to the conversation here.
Down with no limit, I ride for the cone. From the nigga on the tank, want you die. Them niggas might have run, but them niggas can't hide. It's like shooting yourself. It's a suicide kill. See, in the whole life, birth, niggas in the know you. Know a man's big hurt, just like soda stream. He'll put you in the dirt and have your picture on front of a t-shirt. And when I make wins, I got 100 niggas with me. Just in case a nigga out there trying to get me. All my niggas, it's time to squeeze the trigger. That's why I'm down for my motherfucking niggas.
Now, April 6, 2003, the United States Department of Justice, their Bureau of Statistics reported that prison jail may, the mid-year of 2002, and this is consistent with today, unfortunately, of African-American males born that year. Now, 2003, this is 16, we got about, what, 13 years now? Those born that year, 29% can expect, Pastor, to spend some time behind bars. One in 14 African-American children had a parent that was in jail or prison. One in 20 African-American men were incarcerated compared to one in 155 white men. For every three African-American men in college, four were in prison. This information represents the serious social economic challenges confronting this present generation, African-American males. Now, when I was at the school in Nashville, Tennessee, we catered to one of the populations or neighborhoods that was known for gang violence and homicide and poverty and things of that nature. I allowed some young men who were selling their rap music. Actually, I bought one of them from the guy because I wanted to hear it. I wanted to hear from them. It's the best way you know how to teach them, you see. Right. And the principal came by one day. My class was in order. Everybody was quiet, doing their assignment and working. But she heard this music, and it troubled her. She came in. Can I talk to you, Mr. Stafford? Sure. She says, Do you realize one of them got music on back there? I said, no. I gave them permission to turn it on at my desk. And as long as it was at a level where it wasn't so loud out in the hallway and they were working, I told them that was all right. Okay. It was unusual for her to see that. And what I share with her is I understand that if I'm going to be able to teach them, I have to reach them first. When you think about C. Murder, you see where his mindset is? He don't care nobody but who. He's not thinking about anybody's life but who. So he's already determined that anybody that ain't in his clique, his gang, his set, is his enemy, and you hear what he did. I got to kill. Can you appreciate now why we have so much carnage on the streets?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
And you see, go ahead, Professor. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And what they were doing, they're only crying out. Just wanted to share that with you.
Absolutely.
I want to hear what you were saying, but that's what they're doing. They're crying out for help.
Absolutely. This behavior is how they cry out for help. Now, if you listen to some of the things he said, he was working under the assumption that these other people that were, quote, not his niggas, unquote, were a threat to him and his niggas. And interestingly enough, Snoop Dogg comes in, and another famous rapper, and he promotes the same mentality, basically. And the idea is that we have to protect ourselves against them. The rest of the world is our enemy. And anybody that don't see life the way we see it, don't believe the way we believe, and don't get down the way we get down, they're our enemy. We got a lot of young brothers who are operating under that false assumption that somebody that just like them, somebody just like them now, come from a similar, if not identical experience, is your enemy. Therefore, you must prepare yourself to destroy. I asked myself some time ago, what would make a young man, little boy, take a weapon, draw it, draw down on another human being, and discharge their weapon to destroy their life? What would cause them to do that? If you think about the motivational drive behind the fear and the anxiety and the lyrics that drive the behavior, the day-to-day actions of these young folks in these songs, can you appreciate now where that motivation comes from?
Sure, without a doubt, man, because words are powerful, Pastor.
Words are
very powerful. And then, as again I said, once again, for all that don't know anything about the gospel, they're not pretending. Life and death is in the power of the tongue. So when they speak the type of power, and then if you're not with the guys, if you're not with the fellows on how we do our thing, then you are our enemy. And that mentality is not like they're really sizing you up or anything. It's just something in a style that they're living, and so you automatically would be against what they're doing. This is what the thought pattern brings forth. Not
exactly.
They adopted that way of life from somewhere, somehow.
Talk to me.
Power of hearing words and everything. Me seeing them guys standing on the corner, styling and profiling, they were speaking words. They had a certain look. You know, and to the kid, you know, yeah, I was in captivity at that point without even knowing it. And I want to share something with you. You were talking about something that has to do with the women. And, man, I mean, you hit me so hard. I was thinking, I thought, oh, my goodness, Pastor, you hit so hard right there, man. When you're in that insanity lifestyle, you're in it. I mean, when you're really in it. And I'm just saying, I myself only can speak about that I was really in it. I thought I was into the basketball, but I discovered that I had a little more strength. You know, even though I still had the basketball in my hand throughout the process, from when I was captured on through the process when I got free, I still had the basketball. But I never understood how can I have something that I love so much in my hand and still couldn't exercise it or pursue it. And it's because of the power of what I saw and heard others doing and saying. And so I like to read a little bit out of the book entitled Steer High. You know, it's just my book. You
yes,
know, Pastor,
sir. Please,
even now.
Please.
On page 65. For those that don't have the book, I'll share this with you because it was something important about when you said something about the women.
Okay.
I am happy to see that I have had the opportunity to speak with several women from my past now that I'm living for God. Now that I'm living for God, and I have asked for their forgiveness. So why would I be asking for their forgiveness? It must have been something that I was doing. But anyway, even though I feel a deep sense of sadness thinking about how I treated them, I feel great joy to know that they have forgiven me. Today, my view on the importance of a woman and the respect she deserves from a man is at a new level of understanding. She's a gift from God, and she has never intended to be misused or abused, especially by me.
Okay.
I realize now that to receive love from a woman is a special privilege that should be cherished and honored at all times.
Wow.
I just wanted to share that, but it was because of the trap. I was unable to carry it out, but I learned through the process, and I'm so glad that they was able to forgive me when they discovered that I made a turn in another direction. And that's done taking anything from the name. I just stopped pretending to be something that I wasn't because
George.
I had a mother, a sister. Amen. You know, and I had, you know, people that was females, man, that they deserved more respect than they was getting from me. So today I just think, you know, learning that, again, is what I had to do. So I just wanted to share that when you made known about when they call the women those names. And, I mean, it's a lot of that still going on. I mean, it's at a real deep level, too, man. And so when they go since I'm doing it, I say, Ricky, what can you say? There's nothing that you can say to put the brother down. This is a style of darkness that you came from. So the best way for you to do is be an example to know that change is possible, that it can be accomplished, and that it's available. And that's what I would say to those who are still trapped and caught up, you understand, and deserve for somebody to at least get down to their level. So while they're out there utilizing the language and talking that what they would call jive or talking that stuff or being hip or whatever they want to nickname it to be. Of course, you know, we started out with this program talking about the nicknames of you know, we being called this and that and the other. But now, man, I just thank God for what you're doing and for how you brought forth that type of information. Just wanted to share that.
Well, we got more. We got more. And let me just say briefly that you can access this book, Still High, that Pastor Waller just read from, on our webpage at bfcinstitute.com. When you go to the webpage, simply go to Contact Us, hover over it, and you'll see the back store page. There you can purchase the book through us, and there's a secure link to PayPal for you to make your purchase. And every time someone does so, Pastor Wallace has committed to contributing to our lecture series that we're aiming to take to 10 states across America. And so you will help us to get the word out, to share this type of information that we're sharing tonight. Let me thank you again, Pastor. And with that, we're going to can you hear me?
Yes, sir. You're very welcome.
Okay. We're going to take a brief intermission here, but before I do that, let me set us up for the next conversation. And we're going to be talking about this brother by the name of Michael Jones. Michael Jones, a.k.a. Mike Jones, born November 18, 1981, in Houston, Texas. A hip hop or rapper today, as he's calling himself. And he's talking about back then. Now, you may be able to relate to this, Brother Pastor. So on the other side of this brief break, we're going to come and we're going to talk about Mike Jones and back then.
All right.
And we'll return in just a little bit.
All right.
Hey, they call me Poop. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up be a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked, where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
Hey, bro. Yeah, this is Salva, man.
What's going on?
You gonna believe who I seen last night, man? Tisha. Yeah, the one did you last year.
Word?
Man, she was buzzing for your number, kid.
You lying.
Remember back then, she ain't want you, now you have to, I was on you.
Talking about the generation of mystification. And what you just heard after our announcement was Mike Jones back then. He said that when I was young and I didn't have no car, no gold in my teeth and rings on my finger, I wasn't balling and shot calling, I wasn't big band in the streets and the life and that thug life. They didn't want me. But now I'm hot, they all on me. Interestingly enough, Brother Pastor, his greatest sense of pride is being able to flaunt materialism.
Oh,
is that what manhood? Is that what manhood is all about?
That's what it became through the process of in the eyes of. Yeah, it became that. Then it's part of the trap. It makes the trap more effective.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, it does. It makes it more tragic.
Can you appreciate dire need for us as men of God to step down into this reality and knowing that God didn't give us a spirit of fear? Look these little brothers in the eye and say, son, where you going will lead you to nowhere fast.
Ain't no future. No, sir.
What you did to get these material things quickly, all it takes is for the man to roll up on you and blue light you, and it's all gone in an instant. If you're not killed in the street.
Yeah, that's the part that's real tough right there, Pastor. That's the tough part because, see, that time is not right now. And I'm clocking these dollars right now, you dig? And so that time
right.
is
I
not.
I can't see nothing else.
No, there's no way. It won't allow you to. You know, it won't allow you to. It's amazing that it's that way. I mean, you know, coming from that, when I say I was getting at a fast pace and, you know, it was like, you know, I spun that wheel because it was more to come. And the lifestyle that I was living, you know, a lot of times they're talking about living for the weekend. Every day was a weekend to me because that's just the way that the finances was coming. And so the trap wouldn't allow me. So that's so understandable what they're dealing with. And you're talking about back in the day, so it took me back there. And the rap, you know, when you listen to the rap and the rap sounded and the beat sounded pretty good and you tune into it, you understand. And I came from, you know, the word of listening to the message in the music, you know, and I'm coming from, you know, I love the OJs and I love a lot of artists as well. But that was just what I had to do with coming up because I was in that fast pace, that fast lane, and so I needed some real, real strong, powerful information coming through the ears, you see.
Right.
And when he says, open your ears, listen here, and say, you know, we have a message in our music. So even when we got a message in our music, so hum along and sing the song, but understand why you dance. And see, so I understood while I was in the hustle. But I didn't understand one thing, that I was a miserable person living a life of misery with the dollar bills.
Right.
Sleepless nights.
Right.
Running, ducking, and dodging from the police. I mean, this was an ongoing daily thing, Pastor. Nothing that was unique about it now that I understand what I'm out of. But then, oh, man, it was the best thing ever. And so I was listening to even rap songs like this, Kool Moe Dee. You know, when Kool Moe Dee would rap and the things that he rapped about, you know, I used to live downtown. 129th Street, convict, everything upbeat, party. You know,
okay.
Hey, man, and on, you know, and out in the park, we cheer. Nobody gets ill in the park. We call it here. But if you try them, that's when we'll get wild. We don't fight. We cheer. Those things resonate to the brother. So it's a self-destruction type thing. Now, you're doing it for fun. You're talking for fun. You're rapping for fun. You're having it. A lot of joy, but at the same time, it's getting in your system.
Mm-hmm.
And once the young system, man, you know, they're being fed those words, those sounds, and all of a sudden, the cry started to kick in. You understand? They're in so deep there. You know, they want to stop the killing, but they don't know how.
Right. They don't know where to go.
Like, you see? But see, me being a leader of my community when I was captured, see, I broke away before anybody did in my come up, in my era. You're talking about a generation.
I get you.
And I humbly see that. I don't say that egotistically at all. I say that with a pain, with the hurt, you see.
Mm.
That's what I say. I don't say it with no glorifying what I used to do. It's just that I don't want to forget where I came from.
Right.
And so I forget about the young brothers out there right now and say, well, let them get their own. I've got mine. I'm free now. Let them get free on their own. That's not the attitude to have.
It's a bad attitude.
It's a terrible attitude when you have information to help someone that's crying out, and you know the voice of a cry when you hear it.
That's who Jesus wanted us to go to, isn't it?
Yes, that's it. That's it. Because that's what I had to do. I cried unto the Lord with my complaint. I poured it out to him. I cried out to him, Pastor. See, so it's all right. I didn't cry tears of my eyes. I cried within because the pain was so severe. See, when the enemy get locks on these brothers and let them get $2 or $3 more than they had the other day and add to their bankroll, all of a sudden, they're in so deep at that time, it become a part of their life, and they can't wait to start all over again because it's interesting. Hey, man, I made $100 this time. Well, the first time, they made $5. It was so quick.
Right.
You see?
Right. You know, that's interesting to say that. That's interesting you say that because if you hold that thought, and I want you to come back at me on this, this group, Big Timers, they call themselves Big Timers. They're with and they have this particular song that is almost become the anthem of the young black male who is unemployed, who has no place of their own. And if it wasn't for their mama, their grandmama, their sister, their baby's mama, or some young lady that they want to mess around with, they wouldn't have any place to stay. Now listen to the mentality of Big Timers here, just for a second, and afterward we're gonna have our time is getting away from us again, Rick. But listen to where they are, and then we'll have a brief message, and we'll come back on the other side. Calls, you're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Reuben Dockery. Give us a call if you want to join in, 657-383-0944. After this song and this brief message, we'll be right back.
Talk Straight on Blog Talk Radio. Here, you can share your thoughts as well as become informed about very important social issues confronting society today. Please take the time to visit my website at bfcinstitute.com. That's bfcinstitute.com to learn more about our efforts to educate, inspire, and empower disadvantaged families across America to improve the quality of life. The best way to stay in the loop of future broadcasts, times, and locations for our traveling educational lecture series and innovative ideas is to become a BFC Institute seminar participant. You may do so by clicking the Join Our Group tab on the home page. I would be delighted to respond to your suggestions and engage you further in most transformative information. Again, thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hearing from you online.
Hello, friends. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we have our panelists on, Pastor Ricky Waller, with us tonight. Feel free to give us a call here. You still have time. We have about another 17 minutes. 657-383-0944. Pastor, we have just one other song that I want to pull a message from, but you heard what the little brother said. I ain't got no money, haven't established anything for myself now or the future, but I'm okay because I can drive around in expensive cars. He said, all I got is a quarter tank of gas, but I'm going to drive anyway. I don't have no job, you know. I done spent all my money. But that's okay. Isn't that a self-defeatist mentality?
Yes, it is. I mean, it's being caught up. You know, it's what I say. You know, it's a stain on a person's brain when they are captured like that. And that's why it's so remarkable to be able to appreciate, you know, when you realize that, you look back over, you say, man, I was captured. That's the way it had me. You know, you don't have. And so when you're thinking that way, you know, your mindset is settled in a lot of times. And it's a plan, you know, to capture people's minds that don't have anything, never had anything, and suddenly they come up with a little something. And it, you know, become interesting, more interesting than it was before you had it. And so, man, I mean, it's amazing how that happened. But a lot of young people have been captured as a result of that. And thank God for those who haven't, man. I praise God for those who haven't. We need more. We need more like that because it's dangerous, man. It is very dangerous.
I'm inclined to believe it's almost an addictive type mindset or mind frame of behavior, you know. You get caught up in, as you described in your book, the trap. And the trap is all of the social economic things that stimulate you or push you in that direction, right?
Oh,
or education, lack of love, lack of self-respect, lack of focus and purpose in life. All those things become a cocktail, if you will, that drives this mentality.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not here to castigate the young men who are engaged in this lifestyle.
I'm here to point
this out as the basis of why we must come with the focus manner we must come as preachers and as anybody really truly concerned about them. Because if you don't, what you'll find is you will lose those who need to be saved. They're already in a fix. They don't, you know, they have nothing to lose.
No,
so we come wrong. We come wrong in our feelings and our emotions and our ego, and they tell us to step off. What do they have to lose?
That's right.
Nothing.
That's right.
Absolutely
nothing.
I'm saying that to say we must be prepared. This this lecture series is geared toward educating young and old people as to how we got here, and that will give us some indication how we need to back out of this trap that we're in. Before time get away from us, Brother Pastor, let me introduce this last fellow. This is a young guy, and as I was doing my research, he struck me to be one of the most interesting artists. He refers to himself, ironically, as Pastor Troy.
Okay.
And if you look at his videos and you look at his get-up, his costume, his uniform, he's in a liturgical garb.
Mm-hmm.
And he speaks a lot of very interesting truth, but I'll give you a chance to listen to him for yourself. This is
okay.
One song entitled Old Father. Now, I want to read something, and then I want you and the listening audience to think about what he's saying in relationship to this statement that I make.
Mm-hmm.
On December 18th, 1865, the 13th Amendment of the United States Constitution was ratified. That move positioned African-American males to take off in the pursuit of happiness as described by the framers of the Constitution in the United States of America. They are free. But five generations later, now it's December, we're at December the 17th, the 13th, I'm sorry, 2016, over 150 years later, and now far too many African-American males aimlessly roam urban streets without any focus or direction, heavily populate the prison systems of America, and wind up, unfortunately, in early death. The question that I want to leave on everybody's mind tonight is, where does he go from here? Listen to Pastor Troy. Listen to Pastor Troy. This young man he was born in 1977, 39 years old. Listen to what his answer is to that. Where do you go from here? And it's amazing. Let's talk about that on the other side, Brother Pastor.
Yeah, we ready. You know what I'm saying? We're trying to do it different in this time. You know what I'm saying? We flip it in Creole this time, you know? You know what I'm saying? Just why I'm in the stands, you know? I got something to do in the morning. Get out of the list and get to the list. I'm saying, kick you, gonna cry on you. Making it out of this thing.
I was that cool.
You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, on with our panelist, Pastor Ricky Waller. As you listen to the young man, 150-some plus years later, there are a lot of young brothers across America who hold the same mentality. I smoke dope, I drink alcohol, and I just try to medicate myself day by day. But I'm ready, Father, for you to just take me. I'm going to do just enough to cause what is known as suicide by cop. I don't have the courage to take myself out, so I'm going to make somebody else, either another black brother or a police officer, take me out because of my behavior. Pastor, where we at with that, man?
It's saying that when you deal with being numb like that, as I said earlier about being numb, you know, you think that way. You know, I know you don't mind me utilizing my experience with guns and the drug using and, you know, being a heroin addict for 20 plus years of my life, been free now for 24 years. And I remember, you know, this guy, he talks about it. I don't really care to talk about it, but I praise God for him, and he's changed his life as well. And we were very, very right. And so something happened. We got into it, and we was at each other and everything. And he felt like, well, and he knew I love basketball, so he shared that he was going to shoot my basketball legs away from up under me.
Wow.
But I knew he would shoot that gun. You know, there wasn't no if, ain't a bunch about that. So I couldn't go up in a gym. I mean, I know how to throw a basketball pass, and I can hit my target a lot of time, but I don't think I can handle one of them double-barrel shotguns and trying to throw a pass and trying to knock down. I just didn't think it was able to do it. So when I got the information, the CM now closed me inside of a gymnasium with a basketball in my hand. And so anyway, I stayed on guard, and, you know, I didn't, we finally ran into each other. And I do as I'm a gentleman, I like, you know, I'm a stand-up man, and I play the street life, but I wasn't going to do anything to him because he wasn't armed. And I don't like going down that, you know, but I stayed prepared. I just, brother, for him to be armed. So I would have went on and done what I would have done at that time. This is the pattern that we was having. To make a long story short, I was so numb, and I knew he carries a gun with him at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually was at the point where I would go around just the same, not trying to be bold enough to say to go around him knowing what had happened and how, you know, he felt like I got out on him. But anyway, he carries a big gun. And God told me, he said, "Fast, won't you leave, man?" He said, because it seemed like he's thinking about what you've done to him. And but I wouldn't even go. I mean, I'm just as numb as if I'm ready for him to kill me anyway. When you live like that, that sounds like what the man was dealing with. You see,
right.
He's going to let the police come down because the misery of the lifestyle,
right,
man, when numbs is controlling you like that, it makes you numb. Yeah.
Lord,
you know,
have mercy.
He both was hurting people, but today, you know, he's a free man, and he himself would tell people about the situation that we dealt with. I wouldn't talk about it, but he would say it, and he would make known of it, and we just thank God that it didn't come out to be like the enemy wanted it to be. You know, it's a saying that say what the enemy meant for bad, God would get some good out of it. Amen.
But, you know, that's interesting you describe that, because that is exactly the – too often the circumstances, young men that grow up in elementary school and live in the same neighborhood, run around and play with one of the children, wind up becoming the assailant and the victim, you know? And that says something about the context of our neighborhoods and our community. This is why we are people. This is why we're focused on what we're doing and the purpose of this talk show. And the purpose of our traveling series. And we have a threefold purpose. One is to locally operate here in Nashville with our Parent Empowerment Initiative, providing restorative justice for young people in the juvenile courts. Two, we want to share our research-based model for crime intervention advocacy on a national level. And three, we want to give that history and background of how we got here and where the frustration and humiliation of African-American males we see across America in the news, where it comes from and how we can turn it around. That's what we're here for, because this is a very serious thing. And as much as I know about the Word of God, the Holy Bible, I know that God has given us a charge to reach the lost. And to be a light unto a dark world, a city that sits on a hill. God will be our strength. That's what we intend to do.
Bless God.
I've done 19 years of pastoring, Brother Pastor. I've done the four wall thing, preaching to the same folk.
The same.
Lord, I had my share. But God has already called and said, listen, doctor, it's the people that don't know me in the free parts of their sin. And they need somebody to pull them up out the mud in the place. Bring them under God.
Yes, sir.
I didn't come to preach, but I felt my help right there.
Don't stop right there. Doctor. You got to keep going now.
Yes, sir. So some people are afraid, understandably, that you don't know what they'll do. But if you understand why they do what they do, it's easier for you to appreciate, approach them in love, respect, and understanding, and let them know at the end of the day, I'm here to save you. I'm your best friend.
Yes, sir.
You can't get a better friend than me. No greater love than this.
That's
than
it.
A friend that'll lay down his life.
My goodness. Fuck y'all, man. I don't know if we got enough time, but since we didn't stop. Yeah, don't stop. Just, goodness, man. Yeah, man. That's what
kind of... Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, time is working against us again tonight. If you will, join us tomorrow at 7 o'clock p.m. We will have Minister Johnson on, Nathaniel Johnson, Ms. Mary Willington. We will talk about breaking the chains of addiction and the power of God. Until then, we hope that you will come back and join us tomorrow. This is Talk Straight, your host, Reuben Dockery, and we're grateful for you, and Pastor Wallace. Until then, we'll see you.